Welcome to New World Notes. I am Kenneth Doust. Is it time to impeach Obama? This will never happen, of course. Congress wouldn't impeach even Bush. But it's an interesting prospect. I hope you'll stay tuned. W. Bush was, to say nothing worse, a wolf. Barack Obama is a wolf in sheep's clothing. Many, many addled, racist, right-wing nutcases vociferously complain that Obama is a traitor, a socialist, and a Kenyan. Maybe because of this, many in the center and on the left are treating the guy with kid gloves. Not a good material to use on a wolf. You know the truth that the enemy of my enemy is not my friend. Just because Limbaugh and Glenn Beck hate Obama, or pretend to hate Obama, that doesn't mean we should give Obama 3 dozen get-out-of-jail-free cards. So today we'll have a quick overview of the president's manifold sins and wickedness, not to mention failure to uphold the Constitution, federal crimes, and, I'm saddened to say, war crimes. We'll hear thoughtful commentary on the Obama record by David Lindorf and by Margaret Kimberly. But first, let's have a tissue of lies and distortions by Andrew Sullivan. Yes, the former editor of the New Republic. And when a neoconservative like Sullivan starts praising Obama's liberal accomplishments, red flags should start popping up in the canyons of our minds. Here's Sullivan's syndicated op-ed, reprinted in my East of the River local rag, the Journal Enquirer, on April 26, 2010, slightly condensed by yours truly. The Obama Record by Andrew Sullivan. Here we are a year and a half in, and what do we see? An end to illegal torture of terror suspects. Adept handling of the worst financial crisis and recession since the 1930s, leading to a profitable bank bailout and a return to growth. Check. Salvaging of the automobile industry, which is now showing signs of life. Passage of an ambitious stimulus package that has helped repair many crumbling parts of the U.S. infrastructure and poured money into green industry. The biggest social policy reform since LBJ, guaranteeing access to health insurance for all Americans. Financial re-regulation of an out-of-control Wall Street and the beginnings of real scrutiny, see Goldman, of the self-serving corruption at the heart of the financial industry. Repaired relations with Russia, leading to a new START treaty, and better relations with China, leading to a revaluation of the yuan. Joint Chiefs endorsement of ending Don't Ask, Don't Tell. A tough rebalancing of the U.S. position in the Middle East, away from the Likudnik-oriented jerking knees of the last 8 years, and an assertion that U.S. foreign policy should be conducted to advance the interests of the United States, not the interests of a belligerent faction in a foreign country. Sidebar comment, Sullivan seems remarkably reluctant to utter the word Israel. Back to the text. Change we can believe in? How much more could you possibly have asked for in 18 months? This is a dramatically effective administration. End of Sullivan's piece. Obviously, this is a bouillabaisse of outright lies, distortions, and preposterously indefensible generalizations. I do agree with his final conclusion. This is a dramatically effective administration. Yes, it is, Andrew. Dramatically effective in accomplishing the opposite of everything Obama promised during his campaign. Why am I trying your patience with this stuff? Because I think it's another part of a strategy to muzzle the center, liberals, and leftists. First, you have every racist hyena screaming his opposition to Obama and managing to get plenty of media coverage. Sullivan is the flip side. In a reasonable tone of voice, proclaim that Obama is accomplishing all the liberal promises he made to reverse the direction our country is heading. In fact, Obama is doing the opposite. It's a scam, and don't fall for it. Let's move on to an interesting conversation with journalist David Lindorf. He's being interviewed by the host of a show on alternative radio, The Michael Slate Show. Lindorf summarizes the many war crimes and other impeachable offenses for which Obama is responsible. And in the process, he refutes at least two-thirds of the wild claims Andrew Sullivan made.
David Lindorf. Dave is a Philadelphia-based journalist. He's the author of The Case for Impeachment a number of years back, in, I think 2006, and it was about impeaching, the case for the impeachment of Bush et al., his little gang. And he's just recently penned an article in Counterpunch called The Case for the Impeachment of Barack Obama. And guess what? According to Dave, it's very much the same. Dave, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Sure. Well, let's jump into this. You say that as you examine this, you wrote your book, it was 4 years ago, and you build a strong case around the need to impeach Bush et al. And these days, you say, when I mention the book's title, people sometimes ask half in jest whether I'm referring to the current president, Barack Obama. And you say yes. Why?
Well, it's amazing how many of the Bush policies that were impeachable, either as crimes or as crimes against the Constitution, this president has continued. As well as the fact that I'm not sure how many people realize that the Geneva Conventions on war crimes make it a war crime not to punish those who are guilty of war crimes who are in your area of jurisdiction. So that if the mere fact that this president and his attorney general have stated that they will not prosecute the war crimes such as torture authorizations by Cheney and Bush and Rumsfeld and you know, the whole handful of people that helped them with that, you know, Judge Bybee, John Yoo, and others, is in itself a war crime. And it's as serious as the actual acts of torture not to pursue the perpetrators of torture. So right there, that's a huge one. But it goes on. I mean, one of the latest thing, the word that the Obama administration is authorizing the assassination, what have you, of American citizens abroad, merely because they've decided in their infinite wisdom that these Americans are terrorists or non-informal combatants or whatever the term they used for it was, is a violation of the Constitution. American citizens have the presumption of innocence and the right to a trial. So there's another one. The NSA spying, which Obama as a candidate, as a senator rather, helped to preserve by his vote for immunity for the telecom companies, that was sort of a clue of what was coming, but he hasn't stopped it. It's still going on, maybe more than it was under the Bush administration. This kind of sweeping monitoring of our electronic communications.
You know, one of the things that was really heavy to me, I mean, it was that, you know, you look at this, and there's a couple of things I want to hit on what you said, but just starting with this NSA spying, a couple of things, there's the case against the Islamic Charity, and as you make the point
right.
that, you know, this
That's
was
out in your area, right?
Yeah, up in San Francisco, actually.
Right.
And, you know, the fact that this is, this was just continued. It was rolled over, and actually, the suit was only brought that brought about this decision saying it was illegal for them to be spying on this charity. It was only brought because somehow somebody mistakenly leaked what was going on and that the spying was being done. They leaked it to the charity, and then the case was brought. But Obama and them, and they're even thinking about appealing it, you know. And then the other thing is the Wilner case, which to me is a very heavy case where the Guantanamo lawyers, the NSA spying on the Guantanamo lawyers, you know, this is a very heavy situation. When you think about this thing of, like, not just mimicking, but actually developing and taking even further where his predecessor went. Obama is, talk about this, the case that you've built here is actually pretty strong. And when you expand it out, you can really see a whole lot going on here.
Oh, yeah. No, and even on the torture issue, he's been a little cagey about saying, you know, remember Bush said, we don't torture. And then, of course, what he did was redefined torture to basically make it almost impossible to say anything is torture. But Obama's been a little bit facile with that, too, and has left wiggle room to continue the torturing by, you know, just redefining what's torture. So he has not banned torture. And then, of course, there are the actual crimes, you know, statutory crimes, because I think that it's pretty clear at this point, certainly enough to warrant a prosecutor to call a grand jury, that our treasurer, Timothy Geithner, was up to his neck in criminal involvement in hiding the manipulations of Lehman Brothers from the public, from the regulators, and from the investors. So, I mean, that's criminal activity that clearly the Obama administration has primary responsibility for. So I think Geithner should be, you know, probably prosecuted. He doesn't need to be impeached, but he can also be impeached. Members of the cabinet can be impeached, which has a lower standard of proof than, obviously, than actual prosecution, which is difficult, you know, because you have to do show motivation and beyond a reasonable doubt, which you don't have to do with impeachment. So I think for the bank crimes, certainly you've got impeachable crimes. And then the high crimes of violating the Constitution or undermining the Constitution are just legion.
One of the things, when you mentioned torture, it's very interesting. Bill Quigley had an article recently talking about the ongoing torture of Syed Fahad Hashmi, who has been kept for years in prison in New York City. And not even, you know, he hasn't even gone to trial. He's got no criminal record. He hasn't gone to trial or anything. But he's been kept for 3 years in what can only be described as torture, being tortured.
That's federal detention.
Yeah.
So it's again, yeah. No, that's right.
And then the opening of Bagram, not just the opening, but not just the continuation of Bagram, but they're looking to expand it.
You know, that's right.
Specifically for bringing people that they can't bring anyplace else, bringing
them
into Bagram.
Yeah, Bagram is the new Guantanamo, actually, because that what's happened is they've decided to use Bagram because it's thoroughly outside of being, you know, a U.S. territory, whereas the Bush administration tried to do this fiction that Guantanamo is Cuba because it's leased property. But ask any Cuban if they can set foot on Guantanamo.
Right.
It's pretty difficult. So that fiction has been eroded by the courts, which have asserted that the courts have jurisdiction over Guantanamo and that it is U.S. territory. So they've basically moved their most nefarious activities, kidnapping and torture activities, to Bagram Air Base, where they already had it underway and are just expanding it to be the new Guantanamo.
Mm-hmm. Now let's jump into the other thing that you actually make a big case around, which I think is very important, and that's the prosecution of these wars, especially Afghanistan and in Pakistan. Let's talk about that some.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the highest crime in the Nuremberg tribunals, which were encoded in the UN charter to which the U.S. is a signatory, was the crime of aggression and starting wars of aggression. And as the charter states, that is the gravest crime because all the other war crimes are contained within it. And so clearly that was the greatest crime of the Bush-Cheney team, which was starting a war of aggression, defined as, in the UN Charter, a war when there is no imminent threat. And, you know, you're allowed to go to war if you think you're about to be attacked. And that's it. That's the only excuse. It's pretty clear-cut. There's no ambiguity in that one. And aggression is defined in clearly as things like attacking a country, sending missiles at it, firing, dropping bombs on it, firing cannons into it, whatever. And what we're doing in Pakistan, just to, for starters, with these drone attacks, are a violation of the sovereignty of another nation. But more than that, they're actually acts of war against that nation. And you can't say, well, they're secretly approving that. I mean, Pakistan is a democracy. You know, some people will debate what kind of democracy it is, but you can make those same debates about this country. But it is a democracy. It's got a prime minister who's elected, has an elected government, and that government says it doesn't want the drone attacks. So for the U.S. to be sending these drones in and blowing people up, and they're killing more civilians than targets even, there is no imminent threat to the United States or its interests from Pakistan that can justify that. It's an act of war, and it's a crime. Mm-hmm. That's one. That's a huge one. And then there's even a question with Afghanistan, because there was a authorization for use of force, which was a far cry from a declaration of war, but at least it was a fig leaf that Congress gave to Bush in October of 2001 to authorize the what was called the War on Terror, and specifically this was used for the justification for sending the military in and the bombers in to go after Al-Qaeda sites in Afghanistan, and it was more broadly interpreted by the Bush administration to take on the Taliban government and oust them from power because they arguably allowed the bases of Al-Qaeda. That was the claim. And so there you had some, as I said, fig leaf of a congressional authorization for that war in 2001. But that war was over pretty quick. Al-Qaeda was driven out of Afghanistan, and the Taliban were overthrown. Then you had elections. You had the establishment of a puppet government in Kabul. And that's the end of the authorization for use of force. There was no terrorist activity in Afghanistan at that point. There was no Taliban government. So for this war to have gone on for 8 years and for Obama to have escalated it and changed the justification to this nation-building supposedly exercise is totally without authorization. So you now have a war going on with no authorization.
Okay, Dave, we're going to have to wrap it up now, but I wanted to thank you very much for saying loud and clear, the emperor has no clothes, he's naked.
That's what we need to be doing. I mean, it just does. It's unacceptable to say this guy's different from Bush, and so we don't have to hold him to the same standards.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, Dave, thank you very much. And your website again is?
ThisCan'tBeHappening.net.
Okay, and the article is also available on Counterpunch. So, Dave, we'll have you back again soon. Thank you.
Thank you. So long.
Bye now. You've been listening to The Michael Slate Show, and I'm your host, Michael Slate. And we've been talking with Dave Lindorf, whose latest article, The Case for Impeachment of Barack Obama, is really a compelling case and, again, is shouting loud and clear that the emperor is naked, okay, and is guilty of all kinds of crimes, war crimes, impeachable things.
A very interesting interview, in mine humble opinion. In a few minutes, I'll read Margaret Kimberly elaborating on one of the points Lindorf made. Obama claims he has the right to assassinate American citizens and has ordered the assassination of at least one of us, and possibly more. As we used to say, more or less, in bleeping credible. Quickie grammar lesson. You know that in English there are prefixes, where you attach a syllable or two, which linguists call a morpheme, to the beginning of a word. For example, non or pro. If you attach the morpheme to the end of the word, that morpheme is called a suffix. For example, ist. There is a third case where you insert the morpheme into the middle of the word. That's called an infix. And in English, there's only one infix in common use, and that is bleeping, as in bleeping credible and fan bleeping tastic. Some speakers pronounce bleeping a little differently, of course. Here's Bruce Coburn.
Battled with power, here they come. International loan sharks, backed by the guns of market-hungry military profiteers, whose word is a swamp and whose brow is smeared with the blood of the poor. Quality, who render rage a necessity by turning countries into labor camps, modern slavers and dragons, champions of freedom. Sinister and cynical instrument who makes the gun into a sacrament. The only response to the deification of tyranny by so-called developed nations, idolatry of ideology. North, south, east, west, kill the best and buy the rest. It's just spend a buck to make a buck. You don't really get. the people in misery. IMF, dirty IMF, takes away everything it can get. Always making certain that there's one thing left. Keep them on the hook with insupportable debt. The city paid off local bottom feeders, passing themselves off as leaders. Kiss the ladies, shake hands with the fellows, and it's open for business like a cheap bordello. And they call it democracy. 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 You see the loaded eyes of the children too, trying to make the best of it the way kids do. One day you're gonna rise from your habitual feast to find yourself staring down the throat of the beast they call a revolution. IMF, dirty IMF, takes away everything it can get. Always making certain that there's one thing left. Keep them on the hook with insupportable debt. They call it democracy. And they call it democracy.
Margaret Kimberly is an editor and senior columnist at blackagendareport.com, an absolutely terrific website. I'll read a lightly edited essay by her, published there on February 9, titled Obama's Murder Incorporated. No one has the right to kill, we are told. Murder is illegal, and the legal system rightly sets the bar at a very high level before excusing this act. But now our constitutional law professor president, like his predecessor George W. Bush, claims the right to murder American citizens. After 9/11, Bush gave the CIA and later the military permission to kill American citizens abroad if those persons were declared threats to the United States. Obama believes that he too can assassinate Americans if he declares them to be terrorists. This is not some tinfoil hat conspiracy theory. The president's director of national intelligence, Dennis Blair, stated for the record and under oath before Congress that the president can give special permission to target American citizens for death. In words that would make George Orwell proud, Blair explained that the rationale for killing Americans is their actions threaten American lives. If that circular logic was followed consistently, then the killers of the terror suspect would also be killed for taking an American life. Of course, that won't happen because apparently acting on behalf of the government absolves any and all criminal behavior. Blair's assurances are not very comforting and are worthless in any case. There are no checks and balances governing how this permission to kill may be granted. There is no need to prove to Congress or to other American citizens when this act is deemed justifiable. There are no warrants or indictments or grand juries impaneled in order for Barack Obama to decide to kill any individual he chooses. Sidebar comment, Obama is asserting the right to kill Americans on less evidence than he would need to arrest them. On less evidence than he would have needed 10 years ago to tap their phones. That is to say, on no evidence at all. Back to the text. The Obama administration policy originally came to light in a Washington Post article about the targeting of Yemen as a so-called terrorist haven. According to the Post,
The administration has been trying to kill Anwar al-Awlaki. He is a Muslim cleric, allegedly radical, allegedly a terrorist, but he is also inconveniently an American citizen. He was born in New Mexico. No evidence has been presented proving any of these government claims or proving al-Awlaki's involvement in terrorist acts. Yet members of the Obama cabinet can tell Congress, the media, and the public that we have a government run by hitmen. The Fifth Amendment to the Constitution guarantees that our life and liberty cannot be taken away without due process. Those due process rights should not end at the Oval Office or at the United States borders, and our government should not be allowed to get rid of us because we are unlucky enough to be in Yemen or any other part of the world. We have a gangsta presidency and a Congress that isn't any better. Only Congressman Dennis Kucinich was willing to go on the record in opposition to these crimes. Kucinich's colleagues, many of whom are lawyers, apparently are unable to perform even a superficial reading of the document they are sworn to uphold. Extrajudicial killings are expected in banana republics and communist dictatorships and Islamic theocracies or, well, by Israel. They aren't supposed to be committed in violation of the Bill of Rights. There is only one silver lining to this cloud. We now know what Sarah Palin meant when she spoke about Obama death panels. Maybe she isn't so dumb after all.
Margaret Kimberly on Obama's Murder, Inc. One great point she makes is that while we blame the president for the destruction of our liberties, let's not overlook the Congress, which enacted the laws that legalized most of the assaults Obama and Bush and Clinton and the other Bush and Reagan and Carter and so on made on the citizens' prosperity and liberty. Thanks for listening. The opinions expressed, etc., etc. New World Notes comes to you from WWUH-FM, a community service of the University of Hartford. Free email newsletter on request and free website. newworldnotes.blogspot.com. Here we get to my non-carborundum, and let's keep trying to live each day as though the truth were true. Ciao!
Sinister, cynical instrument who makes the gun into a sacrament. The only response to the deification of tyranny by so-called developed nations, idolatry of ideology.